This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Yesterday, Willie.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, sir.
I did say where there's smoke, there's fire, as we were discussing
Jerry,
the Micah Parsons
situation. You ain't
lying.
You're the first person I thought about. I was like, Jerry wasn't lying.
Now, I never thought that this was going to happen. I ultimately thought that as the Cowboys have in the past, they would get to the final hour and they would pay Micah Parsons not $188 million over 4 years, but I did think that he would get his contract ultimately. I thought there was a chance he might sit out next Thursday, maybe then sign. You can go back with Emmett Smith. You can talk about Dak Prescott signing on, I think it was the day or the day before the opener last year. You can talk about CeeDee Lamb getting his money, all these guys getting their money. Well, in Micah's case, that did not happen. And I'm going to tell you right now, I have been a lifelong Cowboy fan. I have worked for Compass Media Networks for, this will be my 15th or 16th year, I don't even know, where I have worked almost every Cowboy game for that period, whether as the pregame, postgame host, or even I've had the privilege to call, I think, 9 games over the last 4 years as well. This is not going to be the usual take. I'm not annoyed at this, and I'm going to lay out my reasons why, and I think we're in agreement. Would I have loved Micah Parsons to stay in Dallas for his entire career? Absolutely. Why wouldn't you? But when you attach the money and the salary cap to it, and a couple of things I'd like to run, if you will allow me,
baby.
I'd like to run a couple of things through you. I know he's 26 and hopefully getting better, but this is what I know from what I've seen, and these are the days that I have said, what the hell,
okay.
All right? I'm going to give you 2021, a very young Micah Parsons, but making a big name for himself. They play the Niners in the playoffs. 0 sacks, 1 tackle for a loss, 0 quarterback pressures. 2022, they beat a bad Bucs team, whatever. Then they play in San Francisco. He played every defensive snap.
I remember that. Lost
that game.
I remember that.
Yep. He had 0 sacks, 0 tackles for a loss, 1 quarterback pressure. 2023, they were a damn good football team. They lose to the Packers and lose big. 0 sacks, 0 tackles for a loss, 1 quarterback pressure, and Green Bay rolled up 415 yards of offense and led 27-0 in the second quarter. 2024, it comes back after injury, was supposed to be the savior. You know, Dak Prescott was injured, but he's going to lead them out. His first game, he played about half the snaps. All right, they get beaten by the Eagles, fine. The next week, a home game against the Texans. He played 96% of the snaps. They lost 34-10. He had 1 tackle, 0 sacks, 0 quarterback pressures. I'm not saying he's not a great player. We know he's a great player. And I know in Dallas, they're losing their minds over this, and I don't blame them. I get it. But if you're going to pay somebody $47 million a year, quarterback money. In big spots, you got to come up big, and he has not done that.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement to some degree. I've watched Michael Parsons for a good part of his career, just mostly like you. I think that if you're a Cowboys fan like yourself or most people out there, you're just frustrated. I think if you should be frustrated with the return. Like Kenny Clark, who they received in the two first rounders, Kenny Clark's best days are behind him. Right, he's a 30-year-old guy who, in his prime, he was a bad man. Right now, if you're Jerry Jones and you're saying you needed to stop the run, I don't know if that's the guy to kind of fill that void. Nevertheless, Michael Parsons, man, I thought Jerry handled this bad, because a lot of what he wanted should have been handled a year ago.
For me, I agree.
I think that a lot of what, as far as being cheaper, this should have happened a year ago.
Yeah. Well, people said, too, as this went on, it was becoming more and more expensive.
And it was.
Yeah.
And so but I also go back to, man, when Dan Quinn was coordinator, and I remember that San Francisco game when they got dog. I mean, they got beat up bad.
Yeah.
It was very, very, very bad. And I remember part of watching that game was they were double-teaming Mike and it neutralized him. And they were going right at him. And that's one way to neutralize a pass rusher, is just double-team him. And you see him at times get caught up in the wash in the run game. Like, I remember at one point, Dan Quinn tried to put him at middle linebacker to see if he could be more effective. And he couldn't get busy. So, I don't know. I'm not crazy about the trade. To your point, if you're a Cowboys fan, he's an elite pass rusher, top three easily.
Sure.
But I also watch TJ Watt and Myles Garrett, who I think are ahead of him, and they get triple teamed. They get double teamed, and they're still effective. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the world is like, what's going on right now? But if you're Jerry, he never does things like the traditional way. He does it Jerry's way. And so it's tough, man. I don't know about it. I think Green Bay, there's no excuses for them now.
See, that's the biggest thing for me, is if you want to say there's one thing that really bothers me about this, it's where they sent him.
Yeah.
That's the – and then he's coming back week four in prime time. Yep. Again, the NFL's like the NBA. It's like a soap opera. Of course they're coming back week four,
yep,
where they're going to see him and he's going to be fired up. And he'll probably have 7 sacks in that game. And the Packers might win the Super Bowl. Why – it's the one thing with these guys, and I know you're one of them as a former player.
Sure.
I hate when they get what they want, though, because and here's why. You put your pen to paper, you signed a contract. You had a year left on your contract, and I want to be paid more. $25 million wasn't enough. Fine. Fair enough. You want to do that. They didn't fine them all summer.
They didn't.
Or all training camp. I think they thought they were going to figure this out at some point. It became very apparent that they weren't. So they let him sit there with the cockamamie injury, not partake.
Back tightness.
Sure, of course. Not practice. And I do believe that they feel like they had a deal done in March. Where the disconnect was with the agent, I have no idea. Neither one of us was in the room. We don't know what the problem was there. But you couldn't have sent him to Jacksonville? Send him somewhere other than in the conference to a good team. That's my biggest hang up with this.
And I'm with you, because this is what frustrates you about Jerry. I remember after they got beat up by the Packers in that first round of the playoffs, I think 2023.
Yeah, beat up. They were losing 27-0 in the second quarter.
It was nuts. And I remember Jerry at the end of that game looking like broken.
Because they were defenseless.
Right. And so for me to sit here and, like, I'm scratching my head like, Jerry, I remember that press conference. I remember you couldn't barely talk. You were so beat.
Yeah.
I mean, you was flush red with anger because you thought this Cowboys team was going to the
Super
Bowl
that year. They were good.
And Green Bay and Jordan Love and company absolutely stomped all over you. And so how do you not trade him to the Detroit Lions, who needs a pass rusher, and Aiden Hutchinson's coming off of ACL? How do you not trade him to the Rams? How do you not even trade him to anywhere else but the Packers? Why? Because you're going to see the Packers. Either in a wild card position, or if you guys both win your division, you want to see him in a division round. So, I don't know, man. It's just tough to. If you're a Cowboys fan, you got to be scratching your head at this one
a little bit. But again, to me, the reason why it doesn't burn me as much is the money. It's the salary cap. This era we're playing in. You've got, you know, Dak Prescott, which to me is nuts, too.
Well, I think part of money is because he's 26 years old.
I get that.
52, I mean, he's,
but you can't pay. So if that's the case.
But he hasn't had any significant injury to, like, hamper him. Like, I just talked about Aiden Hutchinson coming off of ACL. The worst Mike has had is a high ankle sprain.
For sure. But if you're going to pay Dak Prescott $60 million, you're going to give a defensive guy $47 million. CeeDee Lamb's making a lot of money. And by the way, the salary cap is such nonsense.
Yeah.
It is garbage. What are we doing? The salary cap is $280 million for 53 guys. Am I right?
Yeah.
That's 53 guys got to split 200. Meantime, I look at the Packers. Jordan Love's making $220 million, 55 a season, but 55 doesn't really count against the cap because we're going to spread it out over the next 100 years, which is stupid. You got Rashawn Gary's making $100 million. Yep. That's 25 a year, unless I check. But they'll spread that away, and his cap it'll be like 11. It's so fake and phony. It's just like a numbers game. But it's very prohibitive if you're going to pay, in my opinion, to pay someone quarterback money that has, while he has been a great player, I'm not downplaying what he was.
I don't think anybody is. I think some people are split on it because if you watch the game, is he effective in a rush?
No.
No.
He's just not. In the big games, you know, we kill Aaron Judge for being a postseason zero. Mm-hmm. Is that not a talking point all the time here? Well, I'll give you his equivalent for the Cowboys. He's done nothing in the playoff. Nothing. Nothing.
I think for some people, too, I think as much as they are heartbroken about this, they need to turn on the tape like we've watched the tape and go back and watch Michael Parsons' production. Like, yes, against bad teams, he's a juggernaut. Against really good teams like the Niners and Detroit Lions or whoever else who have big-time offensive lines, it's hard to find them on tape at times. And so, yeah, is it the greatest excuse why Jerry sent him off?
No, I'm not saying that, no.
But it's a valid one. If you're in the process of negotiating a contract and you want this guy to be a Cowboy for life.
And there's definitely things I don't like. I don't like that he went to the Packers. I don't like that him and Steven are up there talking about we need to stop the run. All true, but let's not make that the reason. He's not there because it's, to me, too much money for a non-quarterback, and he hasn't been impactful enough in the big games. Now, only 26, so those days could still be ahead of him.
Right.
He might turn out to be the greatest postseason player in the history of the NFL going forward with Green Bay, but he hasn't been.
I think what scares Cowboys fans is that Jerry probably sent him off for a petty reason, that there is maybe something behind the curtain that we just don't know, that Jerry's ego got in the way.
Perhaps.
I think if you're a Cowboys fan and you're trying to save face, or you're trying to say, all right, how can we resalvage this team and get to where we want to get to? It feels, and this is just me talking, that Jerry may have done this for a personal reason.
It could be. I mean, when you think about
it. It's not out of his real house that this is possible.
No, and I mean, he even admitted to that in the documentary, that there are times he does things he probably shouldn't do. The question I would have is, if you go back to the negotiation that he thought he had a deal in March.
Yeah. Jerry talked about that.
What were those terms? I would love to know what those terms were, because he said that at the time he offered Michael Parsons the most money for a non-quarterback.
Mm.
Is that true? If that is true, then why wasn't the deal done? Because they didn't want to talk to the agent. I don't like it. That part of it, there's a disconnect there that I would love the details to come out on.
And I wonder, part of it is, was he waiting on T.J. Watt to see what he was going to get? Was he waiting on other players?
Meaning Micah, and he wouldn't sign the deal until that happened.
100%. So I wonder if there was some chess play with that. But overall, you know, Cowboys fans are pissed off. I was watching social media, and everybody's burning flags, throwing stuff, throwing their cowboy nail you all over the place. It's
and
crazy.
I do understand that side of it. You know, when you fall in love with a player, no one falls in love with players more than I did as a kid, heartbroken when they leave. So I understand that. But I'm also trying to look at this from the other side of things. In a salary cap era that we're playing in a game that is more offensive than it's ever been, you need to outscore teams. If you're going to give up, I'm sorry, what was the Packer game again? If you give 48 points at home in a playoff game, you're not winning that game.
No.
You need to be the team that puts up 48 points to win. There's a lot more to it to me than just the guy's an old drunk, doesn't know what he's doing.
Sure.
And Michael Parsons should have gotten paid $200 million.
Tell you who I feel bad for, that defense.
It's going to be tough. Yeah.
I mean, this happened. I mean, we're a week away.
Well, but I also don't know that they were planning on having him next week anyway. But
no,
you're right.
But there's an expectation. I mean, Trayvon Diggs, Monday, when asked about the deal, he flat out, he's like, man, this is nonsense. They're going to sign him. I'm not worried about
because
it.
Because they always have. That's part of it.
That's part of it. Yep. But two, if you're a teammate and we're having conversations at lunch and you're telling me what's going on with you and you say, hey, dog, we're good. We just got to figure it out. You know what I mean? Mm. I'm anticipating you're going to be where you need to be when it's time to go to work.
I think everybody thought that.
Right. And so we're talking about we're a week away from this. That's the equivalent of us as I'm talking steal a ball for a quick second. Us losing James Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's your guy. That's your battle horse.
Sure.
You know, that's a guy who makes the impossible possible in crucial situations. So if you're bland, if you're overshown, if you're all those guys, you just lost your top dog. And think about what Brian Schottenheimer did when he got the nod to be the head coach. He felt like the team wasn't close enough from a chemistry standpoint. Like they weren't gelling enough. So what did he do? He took Michael Parsons' locker and he took Dak Prescott locker. He smashed them together. He said, you guys are our leaders right now. Yep. Lead us. You just lost one of your leaders before the start of the season.
Yep.
So you're talking about an emotional leader. You talk about your guy who, from a production standpoint, a guy who you need to make plays. You just lost him a week before the start of the season. So I'm sitting back. If I'm Mazi Smith and all these guys, I'm like, dog, like, who's leading us? Who's the guy standing up saying, let's go get this? Who's that guy right now? I don't know if the Cowboys have it.
No, it's going to have to be defense by committee. And right. It hasn't been. But this will go back to my point that I said to you yesterday, and I think the day before that. They haven't been good enough with Micah.
I agree with you.
So
that's why I'm not when it broke, it felt like, wow, this is big. But I remember watching a lot of games where he was out there. And he wasn't dominating the game to the point where
it wasn't
like,
impactful.
Man, yeah, so I don't cringe at it, but I do say, like, the kid is 26-year-old. He's 26-year-old going to Green Bay. And he's going to be playing with a defense that can really play. You know what I mean? With Rashawn Gary, McKinney, Jeff Hafley has done a great job. Like, this defense was fifth in the league last year. So, like, that's the missing
piece.
And now
you add him.
Now, you know, that's that one stone in the Thanos glove, if you will. So, we'll see, man. I think Cowboys, I have empathy for Cowboy fans because they're just like, we just can't get right.
Nothing well, works. They haven't gotten right in 30 years.
Yeah.
So, it's not like this is anything new in terms of going into a season. I mean, they've had good. It's weird. They're like not as good. So don't misunderstand me. But when you look at them every year, for the most part, they're 500 or better. They've had some bad years for sure. Yeah. Last year was one of them. But I mean, over the last 30 years, they've had a lot of good seasons. They just don't win playoff games. And that is very true of recent memory over the last 5-6 years, too. And he's been a big part of that.
I think there's an expectation for Dak Prescott to carry this team.
Well, Jerry, called him out yesterday.
And I'm saying to myself, You're putting the weight of Cowboy Nation on this quarterback's shoulder who's coming off a hamstring. He's 32 years old.
And he put his money where his mouth is because most of the money has gone to the quarterback and the wide receiver.
Right.
And so
But this is what Cowboy fans have to realize. This isn't a Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, and T. Higgins situation. Like, Joe is, I think they're more primed to carry that. They proved it. I mean, they scored with 30-something points a game last season, even though they still lost.
Yeah, but they still didn't even make the playoffs.
Right. But Dak isn't Joe. I think Dak's best years are behind him at this point.
Well, we better hope not, because he's got a lot of time left and a lot of money coming to him.
I
know.
Yeah.
Trust me, I know. It's not easy. It's not easy. I get it. But that's, you know, you got the two first-round draft picks. Oh, I mean, I won't poo-poo first-round draft picks, no doubt. But those aren't going to be high first-round picks. They're going to be picks in the late 20s.
Do you believe they're going to draft or get a guy who's going to have a significant impact right away?
Or do you think they're going to, with the four first-round picks in the next 2 years, like they like to point out last night, do you believe that they will package them for X?
But think about the pick they're getting. It's going to be, what, the 32nd?
That's what I said. Well, if they win the Super Bowl, yeah.
Yeah, the 26th.
High 20s, low 30s,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, you're not getting
that's
a
what
guy.
I said.
So
I know.
It's like, what do we...
I totally understand. Again, I always come back to, it's not just Parsons for Clark and two picks. It's Parsons for Clark, two picks, and you just saved $50 million a year on the cap, or however they manipulate the money, but you're not paying him $200 million, which, I sit here and talk about the quarterbacks getting a fortune, and I don't think it's right. I don't think that the quarterback should get 22% of the salary cap, or whatever number it is, 15%. Because if you ain't got a left tackle, or
you don't have a defense,
you can't win.
Like people love. Like one thing I thought Brady did really good was convert his bonus into what he converted his salary money into bonuses or whatever. Or he pretty much in layman's terms, he pushed his money down the road so he could pretty much build up the defense. They were able to get Dante Hightower, Chandler Jones. Like, they were able to pay those guys. And because of that, they were able to stack Lombardis. That's the end game. You're always trying to win a Super Bowl. And Brady, the best of all time, realized that. He goes, yeah, you can pay me a boatload of money. In his prime, he wasn't the highest paid quarterback.
Right.
So all he did was go to Kraft and say, hey, I'm going to be okay. But we got to build this defense. Can I go to Pittsburgh in December and win? Yes, but I can't do it without a defense. Can I go to Kansas City? Can I go to these places and win? You can't do that without a defense. And so all that money, I understand that. But if the end game is winning, as a quarterback who's in that position to make a lot of money, you got to be smart. Yeah, you can score 30 points, but if you can't stop anybody, it's worthless.
Yep, I know. And if you can't protect the quarterback, it's worthless. You know, Joe Burrow almost got killed last year.
Yeah.
And I know.
And but I give Cincy credit. They've always been trying to figure out that five up front.
Sure.
It just hasn't gone
just like the Giants have for the last 10 years. There's no doubt.
I don't know what they're doing on defense, but I have seen an attempt to get. I mean, they got Orlando Brown. It just hasn't worked out for him. He's just stiff. He can't move. But overall, man, I feel for Cowboy fans. It's never.
Interesting day.
It's never easy for you guys.
Very interesting day for sure.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Whether it's a date night, a special event, or just another Tuesday, our over 800 stylists are here to help you look and feel your best. We're about personalized style that fits your life. Made for real life moments, Maurice's.
We welcome into the program one former Giant from Fox Sports, Jeff Schwartz. Jeff, Willie, and Jerry in New York. Good morning. Thanks for getting up. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me today.
Jeff, thank you for doing it. We got to get right to it. Michael Parsons is now a Green Bay Packer. Give us your thoughts.
Man, so many things here. We'll start with this. So when Micah Parsons has played, and he's played obviously most of his career so far, he's not been that injured. The Cowboys defense is number one in the NFL in efficiency, in EPA. And they're 31 in about 1,000 snaps he doesn't play. Just from that perspective, you know, he's one of the better players in the National Football League in any position, right? If he's that impactful to a team, you know, when he's on the field, you're number one, and when he's not, you're 31st. That just shows you the type of player he is. And then the whole premise of this, like, I shake his hand, and that was a deal. According to who? Like, you only have a handshake deal if both sides agree to a contract. And very clearly, Parsons not agreed to the contract. They might have talked parameters. Hey, I want to make this much money, and this be the length. And then I would imagine Parsons was like, okay, cool. Like, all right, meeting over. Here's, you know, we shook our hands to leave the meeting and let me talk to my agent. And the fact that Jerry treated it this way, and thought Parsons was dumb enough to sign a contract without his agent being involved. And of course there are players that don't have agents, but Parsons very clearly has an agent. And you know, it just screams incompetence, right? It's why the Cowboys have not been good for so many years. I'm watching the Netflix documentary on the Cowboys. It's really good. And one thing you notice is they have what the the second best quarterback in the NFL, the first best running back, the first second best wide receiver, the best cornerback, Charles Haley, like having the best offensive line, all the best players. Like that's how you win a championship. He's letting one of the better players go. And he got in return to what, two first round picks that'll probably be in the 20s and a defensive tackle. And I know the people will say, well, the Packers had to pay him a lot of money. Okay. I'd pay for that. I'd pay for Parsons. He's that impactful of a player. So I don't get what Dallas is doing. This feels like it could be a big derail of the season, right? I mean, think about, you're in the locker room. You have some good players, but you have very few players like Parsons in any locker room. And before the season starts, you trade them away. They play in 6 days, right? They play Thursday night. That's been demoralizing for the new coaching staff, the locker room. I think Dallas is in a world of hurt this season.
They might be, and I'm certainly not going to sit here and argue with you for the next 20 minutes, but, Willie and I were talking earlier, and all full disclosure, Jeff, I grew up a Cowboy fan. I work for Compass Media Networks. I've done their pre and post. I've seen every one of his games. I love the kid. I really do. I wish he played his entire career with the Cowboys, but the one thing, and then we can move on from it, the one thing that I've remembered and I've always come away with, in four playoff games, he's got one sack, four quarterback hits, and the word you use, and a lot of people have too, so you're obviously with them in the majority here and I'm in the minority, very little impact in those games, and most of them losses, and in some cases, you might have been the number one defense, but boy, when Green Bay came in, they steamrolled that number one defense, and he was completely invisible. So I understand both sides of it. I do wish he stayed, and the way it was handled, bizarre. And I don't, you in all your dealings in the NFL, was there ever a time you dealt with an owner first, agent second, or was it always agent first?
Buddy, I was never good enough to have those questions with the owner ever. So I was. You have to reach a certain level of play. Maybe Willie got there at some point in his career. I did not. I knew the owner, especially when I signed the Giants. Like I knew the owners because I was one of the big free agents. But I never was like, hey, buddy, let's talk contract. No, never.
All right, maybe a better question then. Were you ever aware of a situation like that with anybody else?
Because Steve Smith was perpetually unhappy in Carolina, but that wasn't, I don't know, contract related. That was just because we had a bad quarterback and he didn't like the direction of the team. But I think him and the owner were pretty close. And a lot of the big players I were with, it just, not really. I mean, I don't remember a problem like this where, and you think about too, like, the playoff thing is a small sample size, right? It's four games and certainly matters. Those four games matter than maybe other, week two game against Carolina. But, the Cowboys could have done this months ago and got him for 40. Like, that's the thing about it. Like, you didn't have to wait to pay $47 million a year. You could have done it before the Watt deal. Like, they might have said no before the Watt deal. But you could have got it done months ago. Like, this is something to say, well, it was too expensive. Now he is, but when he was first eligible for extension, he was much cheaper.
Let's move over to the Green Bay side, because I do agree with you. I think that's the one part of the negotiation that, I guess, makes me annoyed that this should have happened a lot sooner.
No doubt.
Especially if technically you really wanted him to be a Cowboy for life. Nevertheless, but if you're the Green Bay Packers right now and Brian Gutekunst, the GM, this has to be a home run. You talk about Jordan Love. You talk about the strong offensive line. You had Josh Jacobs. The defense is going to now be extremely better because of Micah Parsons. Is it Super Bowl bust for the Green Bay Packers this year?
I think it is, Willie. It's interesting because I'm a podcast. Josh Schwartz is smarter than you. If you guys want to check it out, I try to make you a smarter football fan.
I love the name
fan.
Of that. That's awesome.
I'm not gonna tell you that like Shedeur Sanders is getting screwed by the NFL. That's like not my shtick. And we go through the division previews. We're doing that right now, and we did the NFC North, and we got to talking about the NFC North. And you think about like the Lions. They're down two coordinators. Some more injuries on defense. Vikings like McCarthy. We don't really know. Is he going to be good or not? The Williams in Chicago, but like you sort of know what the Packers are, right? They were a very good team last year that just couldn't beat a couple teams, right? And those couple teams were playoff teams, but they lost by less than a touchdown, 2 points, 3 points, 5 points. Like they were close last year. They were a very young team. You had another year with hopefully a year of healthy Jordan Love. You add in Parsons, you add in Golden in the draft. Like, it's a really good team. I think there's a value in just they play a certain way that works. They win a lot of games. They're very steady. You know what you're getting every week from them. And you put Parsons in there. You saw what happened. I saw someone tweet about this. I think it's very true. Like when Khalil Mack went to the Bears from the Chargers, like they were good immediately on defense with him. I mean, he's that big of a force multiplier. It makes everyone a little better, right? Because then now the defense is worried about Parsons, and now you have to, you know, opens up other guys for the ability to rush the passer, and maybe the secondary's improved because the pass rush gets home. All these things kind of play hand in hand. So I do think they probably feel that way. I don't think you make this deal if you're the Packers if you don't think you're close to winning a Super Bowl. And obviously, look at the Eagles, and maybe you think to them, you got some early line injuries, not great. You lose some pass rushers. You lose an offensive coordinator again. Maybe we feel like this is the time. Because the NFC does feel fairly wide open. The AFC, I think, feels like three teams, and then maybe that's it. The NFC does feel like, you get hot at the right time, and you can make a late postseason push.
All right, so on that note, Jeff Schwartz with us from Fox Sports, former Giant, host of his podcast, Jeff Schwartz, Schwartz is Smarter Than You. Can you think back in all your years watching and playing a division that right now looks more difficult than the NFC North?
Oh, I mean, I'm sure there was. We say this often sometimes, and that division stinks. I don't think it's going to happen this season. It's going to be a brawl, man. Again, it does feel like you can have, if JJ McCarthy's really good, the Vikings are like skyrocket, right? Look at the roster and the coaching staff. Caleb Williams is good, like skyrocket them up, right? Like there's a chance for this division to be even better. Now, if those two guys are not ready yet or not as good, I think the division can depress a little bit, but it's going to be a battle, man. It's going to be really fun to watch. It's the NFL. Something's going to happen. The ball bounces a weird way and break here and there. The Lions, though, I'll tell you what about the Lions, too. Their schedule this year, and schedule, I think, does matter to talk about teams. All their toughest non-division games are on the road. They're at Kansas City, they're at Cincinnati, they're at Philly, they're at Washington. The Lions have a tougher road than we think to get back to where they were last season. And that's why the Packers are really live to win that division.
I agree. Let's talk about your former team, the New York Giants, who week one, Washington Commanders. Obviously, there's a lot of promise with the Commanders because of Jaden Daniels. But I think the Giants are going to be a different team. We talked, me and Jerry talked briefly about how Andrew Thomas, they rehabbed him back onto the field. You have Russell Wilson at the quarterback position. I do think the Giants front seven is probably one of the best in all of football. What's your prediction on the Giants this year?
So this is a really interesting discussion because the NFL is, I think, pretty unique in that you can be a better team in a given year, but your schedule is really difficult and it might not look that way. Like, I think the Giants, you look at offensively, you mentioned Thomas being back, huge boost. Right on the offensive line, you move Neal inside, you hope you get some stability there. Malik Nabers was great last year. I have not actually kept up. I don't know if his injury status is for week one. I think he's going to play, but he's a little beat up. That's a concern. If he's not out there, it's not great. You're good at running back. Russell Wilson's better than what you had at quarterback. Whether you like Wilson or not, he's better. And you have to just hope that you get, one or two of those deep passes a game. Otherwise, the dink and dunk stuff gets old after a while. And I think Dart, if he keeps doing that for a couple of weeks, they're going to put Dart in. And then your season might change a little bit. Defensively, you mentioned really elite front seven. But their schedule is really difficult. I mean, right now, 17 games, they're a favorite in, I think, one or maybe two. And that's not the BLN, though. You can win a lot of games as an underdog. But
I'll say this, Jeff, and I don't mean to cut you off, and I apologize. I know you think it's me and Jerry talked about this, too. I know the first month of September seems tough because you have Washington, Cowboys, Chiefs, and Chargers. But, I mean, some may argue Jaden Daniels, we don't know how he's going to be in his second year. I think the Commanders still need pass rush help. You talk about the Cowboys now with the absence of Michael Parsons. You know the Chiefs may be a dog. Well, most likely will be a dog for them. But the Chargers, they could get the Chargers. It just depends. So I could see this team being 2-2 in the month of September.
2-2 obviously would be, like, I think, the best case scenario. Right. I don't buy this Jaden Daniels year two slide, man. Their team can be just as good as last year, but not win 12 games because of their schedule. I think Jaden Daniels is an elite player. And I think, you know, people try to kind of push the C.J. Stroud comparison on him because, you know, year two last year for Stroud wasn't as good, but the situations are completely different. You have a much better offensive line in Washington, a much better coordinator. You have a sort of a coherent game plan every week. You let Daniels do more of the offense. Stroud just wasn't really allowed to do very much, which, you know, there's sort of two schools of thought, right? Like you let the quarterback control protections, which I think is the best way to go, or the offense controls protections. I think that's just not the best way to go. And I just think Daniels is going to be really good. Now, their schedule is much tougher, and they got the benefit last year of playing, like some insane number against 40% of their snaps with backup quarterbacks, which is not going to happen this season. But yeah, if the Giants can sneak away with, I think they're gonna, I was worried about the Cowboys game, but I'm not anymore. The Cowboys are, I think, you catch them at a perfect time, man. They're just not going to be, I think, mentally in a good place week two. So you can sneak out of Dallas with a win and then split that, you know, the AFC West. You go to New Orleans, look, you go to New Orleans 2-2, man. You feel great about where you are.
Right.
It's certainly possible because look, if you can play defense, which they'll be able to do, so you limit possessions. You control third downs. You get the ball back to your offense. And Wilson hits a couple of those deep passes. They're certainly in business.
And we saw a glimpse of that in the preseason. Let me ask you this question, just in terms of consistency. I know there were a lot of Giant fans, Jeff Schwartz with us, by the way, that wanted, you know, Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. They wanted to start over again because the Giants haven't won. And I certainly understand that. But in terms of inside the locker room, on the field, how important is it to, A, have consistency at the top with Brian Daboll coming back? And I know the results haven't been great, but I really do feel like he's a good coach. What would that mean for you guys to know you're not starting over again if you were in the middle of your career there?
Oh, it'd be important. Because, you know, these guys that brought you in, you know, what happens a lot of times is that a new general manager, new head coach just get rid of everybody. Right? Like, that's the worry, I think, if you're a veteran is when you are not tethered down with your contract, man, you are gone when they bring a new head coach, general manager in. And I think that gives a little bit of, you know, when the locker room is, you know, a sigh of relief and they kept those guys, because you want, you know, keep going and keep building. I think Dable's a good coach, too. I don't have the quarterback. And this year, we'll see. There's an itch, obviously, to play Dart as soon as possible. I think it'd be best to just wait. There's no rush, in my opinion, to play him. But if Dart is as good as, you know, he showed some glimpses in the preseason, the Giants have a pretty bright future. Again, it's the preseason, and it's, you know, just it is what it is. But he certainly looked the part. So I think keeping Daboll, letting him draft Dart, I imagine, will play at some point this season, will be exciting for the locker room.
Big college football week, and I know you're big on it. I know you're out in Oregon right now, but there's some key games. Can you give us some must watches?
Oh, man, what a weekend. I mean, this is like, it's a rarity to get a weekend. Like, we got three top 10 matchups this weekend. We have two on Saturday, early morning, the Texas, Ohio State. I'm on the West Coast, as you mentioned, but God, best coast for watching sports, man. I mean, last night, I'm here in Oregon. You're watching Cincinnati and Nebraska. It's over like 9:30. Oh, it's the best, man.
It's just so good.
So that's a 9 a.m. Pacific kickoff, the Texas Ohio State game. What a matchup. I like Texas to win, which kind of scares me a little bit. I think that one thing in college football that we don't talk about enough that I think is worth discussing is quarterbacks making their first start is a young player. Like, it's a lot, man. Like, we see a lot of times these young quarterbacks, it's just tough early on. And it's nothing wrong with that. They eventually become good. But Ohio State is starting a new quarterback, Julian Sand, right? First start, redshirt freshman. They replaced two first-round offensive linemen. They replaced two running backs drafted in the second round. They replaced a wide receiver. Now, Jeremiah Smith is plus part of the country, so they have good tight ends. But they replaced Chip Kelly, their OC, with Brian Hartline, who has not called plays before. And Ryan Day, I imagine, will help him with the offense like he did with Chip last season. Defensively, they lose seven or eight starters, including a lot of their senior pass rusher type guys. Now, that Caleb Downs, again, like, they might have the two best players in the country. Caleb Downs, he's incredible. I don't know if you have time to watch much college football, but Caleb Downs is so much fun to watch. Because one thing that sets college and NFL apart on defense is a safety play. Because in college, safeties just, they're not in the box very often. Right. They don't tackle very well. This dude is an NFL safety playing college football. He's unbelievable to watch. He does so much for that defense. they have a new defensive coordinator too. Like they have a lot of new pieces. And while Arch Manning, I don't know if he is good or not, you know, but he has played some football, started a couple games last year. He got in some spot duty every now and then. Texas does replace four offensive linemen, which I don't love, but they're really good on defense again. I think Texas wins that game. I like LSU to beat, Clemson to beat LSU. I think Clemson might be one of the better teams in the country, or is the best team in the country at the moment. They return almost their entire offense. It's a veteran offense. It's a pro offense. The guys are coming back, going to the NFL next season, especially on the defensive line. And then I like Miami at home against Notre Dame. A customer thing, Notre Dame starting a first-time quarterback, a redshirt freshman. Maybe these guys played last year, true sophomore. I don't know. He didn't play very much. He didn't start any games, right? He's going on the road to play a top-10 Miami on national TV Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. Like, that's a big ask for a young quarterback, man. I think we don't talk about that enough. Like, that is very hard to do. And so, I think Miami's good this year as well. I like Carson Beck. So I like Miami, I like Clemson, and I like Texas.
Last thing for me, Jeff Schwartz with us for a couple more minutes. Are you Belichicked out, or are you one that's excited to see what he does in North Carolina starting Monday?
That's a great question. I care less about him than I think I did about Dion. We're trying to, equate the two, right? I think what Dion was so interesting was like the way he spoke about it, right? Like he was very bold. I kind of was drawn to that. Plus, I was covering the Pac-12 full time, and I just loved like talking about Colorado. It was like a fun subject to talk about because it was such an experiment, right? Like all the transfer portal players, Jackson State to Colorado, how good is Shadur, how good is Travis, like all these things. Like it was sort of a known quantity a little bit, right? Plus, you know, again, you know, we talked to a big game, and like it was fun to cover. Bill's like quiet. He's got a portal roster as quarterback, came from South Alabama. The one thing that I think is most interesting to me is you look at like his last five Patriot drafts, atrocious, like terrible drafts, right? And so college football is a lot about picking the right players, right? And I have a concern. Like, that's what I'm most curious about. Not really the X and O's part. I think he can still coach, but like, you have good players. And so, I don't know, man. I was all in on Colorado, maybe because I was covering them full time. I'll watch Monday night. I mean, I like football. We're all going to watch football, but I don't feel as drawn to the story as I did to Dion.
Fair enough. Jeff, I know it's 6:25 out there, so we really appreciate you waking up. Enjoy the first weekend.
I'm up for 2 hours, guys. I'm on East Coast time. I'm up for 2 hours. We're all good.
You sound like you've been up, so we do appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend.
Take care, guys. Have a good one.
Jeff Schwartz, Fox Sports. Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You, his podcast, and of course, former Giant.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Your life isn't one size fits all. Every day brings something different. Your style should too. At Maurices, we make it easy to show up feeling comfortable, confident, and completely you. Our over 800 stylists are here to help you look your best. From tried and true denim to head-turning looks, we've got styles that fit your life and your budget. Fashion made for real-life moments. Maurices.
It's interesting. With the football, what CeeLo brought up in Tommy DeVito, and he's got to have some anxious moments, I would think, although, you know, his professional career is going to continue, of course. What was cut down week for you? How difficult? Now, you clearly were never in that situation where you were going to think you were going to be released, but you were with guys that were fighting for their professional life. Like, how difficult is this week in the locker room?
It's tough, man, because a lot of these guys have been together since the spring, or have been before they got either drafted or, you know, pretty much trying to get into it. They've been around each other, meaning they've either visited the same team or been a part of that kind of wave. And so when you land on a team with a guy, like I all I could do is go back to my rookie year. I got drafted with 14 guys. Only four guys made the team.
Wow.
And all those guys, what's weird about it, like we, you know, you go through your OTAs, you go through your training, you go through lifting weights, you do all these things together, you do form a brotherhood. However, we all know that day is coming. But there's nothing that prepares you for the goodbye, because you technically don't have a goodbye. I remember when I was walking through the building and I knew it was cut day, there were about six or seven scouts that were behind the door, like in a line, like almost like a firing squad. Mm. And when you're a rookie for the Steelers, you get off the bus and you walk into the building. Now, obviously, you kind of know your routine. You kind of, you know, get your stuff on, get showered up, all that stuff, get ready for the day. There were seven scouts sitting there. And as we rolled into the building, they literally point at you. They're like, you, bring your playbook and we need you upstairs. And I remember walking, right? And as they're pointing, as I walked through them, I stopped. And one of the scouts was like, Willie, what's wrong? I was like, did you point at me? I wasn't sure. And he was like, no, go get ready for the day. And I remember turning around, and it was only me, Santonio Holmes, and like two other people. And I was just like,
the other guys were gone.
Gone. And to this day, I haven't seen him.
Really?
They
didn't resurface in the league, and that was their shot.
All gone. And I never said goodbye. I never saw him again. Like, at an event, it was just like, boof.
It's amazing to think, like, and I guess it could happen here, too, if like Eddie or me or whoever got fired today. It's like, it's your home for, in that case, months and months and months, and you got your key card, and you're going to work every day, and then all of a sudden, one day, they're like, we're done with you. Give me your key card. Give me the playbook. Get the hell out of here.
That's it. And then, you know, on top of that, you get to know a guy's story. You know, his mom, his dad, does he have kids, what he's been through, where did he go? You know, they're like, you kind of, your world kind of immerses in his, and that's, you know, that's what builds team chemistry overall. So it was tough to see guys walk out because, you know, the biggest problem is I think some guys mentally cut themselves, especially if they look at the depth chart like, well, I'm third string, I'm fourth string, man. There's no way I'm making this team. And that's why I tell a lot of young guys, especially, you know, I just came from Steelers camp not too long ago. I'm like, man, don't cut yourself. Just whatever the reps are, just do your best, right? And when the preseason comes, wherever you play or however it, you know, comes into fruition for you, just give it your best, man. Because I think some guys start looking at the depth chart, they start looking at themselves, they start looking at lack of reps, they're like, man, I'm out of here. I'm like, that's the worst place to be. At the end of the day, sometimes some teams do bring you back. They bring you on practice squad, and they'll give you another opportunity, or they kind of say, hey, we got to do some things now, or aren't I in, so we'll bring you back later down the road. But it's a tough time for a lot of guys because it's a lot of hard conversations you're going to have. And it's rough.
Well, it's really amazed me for, you know, all these years watching football. And by the way, training camp coverage on The Fan brought to you by Geico. Switch and save, get more with Geico. So, you know, the NFL goes from 90 to 53. Mm-hmm. College football, I mean, they can have a million guys on a roster.
Right.
You know, how do you cut through? Like, if you're talking about these guys cutting themselves because they're not happy with the reps they're getting. If 40, if I got the numbers right, if 37 guys are getting cut, like how much of that film is really being processed by the head coach, or is it being brought to the head coach by the coaches that are watching and say, hey, you might want to check out number 78
sure.
because this guy actually can play a little bit?
Well, I think it's they have a whole department. I mean, the whole front office and scouting department, they have pros and college scouts, and obviously the offensive staff, defense staff, they vet all that out. But I try to tell a lot of guys in reference to making a team, just it's you always hear the cliche, well, you know, play like it's your last down, right? But it's bigger than that. Like you gotta stand out in some form of way. Like that's why I was never against guys fighting in training camp, because it shows that you're will, like you're not just a body out there, like you're actually kind of doing something. So I think guys just have to have a mindset, especially when they go into other operations. Because whoever's cut, they're going to get picked up by some other team. I just try to stand out in some facet. Obviously, do your job, but just do something. Like, you know, I was always, if I wasn't getting enough playing time, I was going to try to pancake a guy in practice. I was.
Yeah,
because that's the only way I could stand out, to show that I was ready for the fight. I was ready for the opportunity. So I was always, that's why I got in so many training camp fights, because I was always like, man, you know, when I got to Steelers in 06, they had just come off a Super Bowl. They didn't need Willie Colon.
Right.
They just didn't need me. So I was like, man, what am I going to do to show Bill Cowher, who was the head coach at the time, that I'm worthy of being on a championship outfit? So I was getting fights. I was always trying to pancake a guy. I was hitting guys after the whistle. So I was doing something. And so I developed this mentality of being chippy and scrappy. And then guys was like, oh, well, the kid's a fighter. Let's put him out there, see what he got.
Yeah, nice quality to have.
Yeah, and so that's why I tell guys, just try to stand out in some facet. Yeah, it may be kind of not warranted from the head coach, but at the end of the day, you got to get a job. You had to win a position.
Right.
And so you got to stand out somewhere.
As much as you're a team, you're still fighting for a paycheck every
day. Man, Bruce Arians and I got to credit him for saying, B.A., Bruce Arians, who is my offensive coordinator with the Steelers, obviously won a Super Bowl with Brady and the Bucks. When he was out at OC, he used to stand up in front of the team, excuse me, the offensive unit, and be like, hey, we are not the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. The Pittsburgh Steelers will be rolling out opening day. You guys are a bunch of individuals trying to become Pittsburgh Steelers.
That's interesting.
And he would say that, and guys would be like, ha, ha. And then cut day started rolling around like it is right now, and everybody stopped laughing about it.
Not funny anymore.
Because it became real. Like, he was like, you guys are a bunch of individuals. And he was saying that to guys who had contracts.
Mm.
And he's like, some of you guys think you guys have it, like it's already locked. That is not true. The roster is not set, and they will, and like he would just say it redundantly, and guys would be like, yeah, B.A., we hear you. And as we got closer, you started seeing the heightened anxiety, especially on the practice field.
Sure.
Guys, and he would look at guys and be like, and he would do like this.
Clock's ticking.
And like he would say, like, you can come out here and just keep messing up or having a day or just packing it in. But the Steelers, he says, my Pittsburgh Steelers will be there opening day. I don't know where you would be, but my Pittsburgh Steelers. And guys laughed until days like today. It's like, man, I hope I'm one of his.
Yeah. That's harsh. It's a harsh business, there's no doubt. As we, you know, now that we are, you know, a week and a half away, has anything changed your mind about these two teams here with the Jets and Giants? Or do you feel the same way about them you felt 4 weeks ago?
I think I feel the same way. I think the Jets, I'm happy the Jets have really understood that one of the things I think they failed at in the draft was not giving Quentin Williams any help. I thought they needed more beef eaters. And I think the fact that they got Harrison Phillips and they got the kid Juwan Boggs, I may be messing his name up for the Browns, they realized that if they want to get the best out of Quentin Williams, they got to give him some help. They got to get somebody to take some of those double teams off him. And they did so. So I'm happy in that regard. I think they're still a little deficient at the quarterback position. Nothing against Justin Fields. But when you start seeing some of the other elite talent at that position, there's a drop-off.
Have you been out there? Have you seen him?
I haven't seen him. I've been watching him. I watched a lot of the preseason. I thought he looked fairly good. I didn't think he looked awful at all.
I had a caller yesterday. I thought his question was, you're a good person to ask. He's like, you know, this guy was so good in college. He was drafted high. He's obviously got ability. What is it about him that says he can't throw the football?
I think it's just his makeup and how he was. People don't understand. When he was at Ohio State, One of the biggest knocks on Justin Fields is that he holds on to the ball. He has bad foot mechanics. He's a big-time athlete. The kid is tall. I think he's like 6'4". He can run. He can do a lot of things with the football when running the ball. Nevertheless, but when he was at Ohio State, he was actually sitting in that pocket and look for the big shots. Today's game is getting the ball out your hand so fast, right? Like 2.3 seconds. Mm-hmm. Just get it out. That's not the genesis of his game. So now when he got to the league and you see him with the Bears and you seen him and everything that he went through with the Bears is crazy between multiple head coaches and on and on and on. Landing in Pittsburgh, got a shot. The ball was taken out of his hands, even though he had a 4-2 record. Some of those miscues and mechanics still kind of linger with him, still holding on to the ball, bad footworks. And now he's with the Jets. You just hope that there's been some maturity now that he's with a different outfit. And I think the one way they can help him out is being able to run in the ball. He should not be throwing the ball 35 times a game, 30 games. He's a play-action guy. Let him run the ball. I think he adds another dimension to the run game because of his ability. And I think he's a player to me that comes with instructions. He's not a guy you just say, hey, we're going to put the offense on you. Like, no, he's capable of doing good things, but it's limited, right? It's in a bracket. So use those things and allow him to flourish within the offense. But I think the strength of this offensive line, strength of the Jets team, is the offensive line. And I think Justin Fields, Breland Allen, Breece Hall, Isaiah Davis, they can impact that in a lot of ways. I don't see this guy sitting back there and winning a game solely off his arm. I don't think he's that type of quarterback.
What I'm hearing is 1980s type of offense. Run first, pass when needed.
I think it helps the defense out.
Yeah.
I think, the strength of their team right now is the offensive line. They have, good young talent that can really get it done. Is play behind them. You know, like, don't put too much on this kid right now.
Yeah, and shorten the game.
Shorten the game.
Long drive, shorten the game. But get in the end zone, too. I mean, that's the other thing.
You got to score.
Yes.
100%.
If you're settling for field goals, we've seen that that play way too often around there.
Right.
It's hard to win 9-6.
But in reference to the Giants, I think they're going to be fine. I think there's a lot of talk about their schedule and how hard it is. You know, listen, I think Russ is going to be the saving grace. Now, how well he plays, I don't know. But I think having a competent, experienced quarterback to kind of lead you through this gauntlet. I mean, you're talking about Washington, Dallas, Casey, and Los Angeles Chargers there.
Tough. You know, as I said yesterday, you don't know until you play these games. They always play Washington tough. And Dallas is kind of, they're interesting to me.
What makes them interesting, they don't have Micah.
Right, so and I don't know that he's going to be there week one. I have no idea. And so there's a little bit of instability with that team right now. So who knows? You know, you've got two games. I think the two games are obviously critical for the team for sure. But splitting those two somehow is critical to me for the fan base.
Oh, if they're 2-2, you should be jumping out. If they're 2-2 coming out of September, yeah, you should be.
And I also think, trust me, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not expecting them to beat the Chiefs at all, especially not in primetime. But if I was going to have to play Kansas City, I'd much rather do it in September than 100%. Later in the season when they start humming.
Right, when they know, but they start getting their wheels underneath them. I agree.
And I love the fact for them, they get the Chargers at 1 p.m. And, you know, those West Coast teams playing those early games on the East Coast doesn't mean they always lose. I'm not saying that. But it's different for them.
Well, when I was at Pittsburgh, I always chalked it up as a dub because the time difference.
Yeah, it screws you up a little bit.
And then, they're coming from 80-degree sunny weather, flip-flop weather, and they come to Pittsburgh, it's 50 degrees.
Sure.
So they're like,
now, it could be 80 degrees in September here for sure.
100%.
But it is still different for them. And so you got four games. You know, I'm not expecting 2-2, but I also don't think it's so far-fetched either with their defense. That's what I think.
And I agree with you, especially when you look at, we love to say Jaden Daniels will come out hot. We don't know that.
No, year two. Really take a step back. You never know.
100%.
You never know. Obviously, they have the long inning yesterday. They score 9 runs or whatever the hell it is. They win by a lot. They beat them. They just crushed the Nationals. That third inning was crazy. So here would be my question. So Anthony Volpe, we know, is struggling.
Yeah.
Okay. You have a day where everybody's hitting. I mean, they were running. I know he made the 2 outs in the 1 inning, fine. But Aaron Judge hits a home run. They score 11 runs with Giancarlo Stanton red hot sitting. You get the good start from Free. Like, everything is good. And yet, the amount of Yankee talk I hear surrounding Anthony Volpe a day after they complete a sweep and everything went well, to me, is amazing. The fact that he got booed at the end of that third inning where the team just put up 9 runs. He hits a laser of a line drive in the first inning, right at the guy. Okay, fine. You know, the Phillies cheered Trey Turner to get him turned around. The Met fans cheered Francisco Lindor. And I understand this has been a horrible season for him in a lot of ways. But I also know he's 24. He's your guy. He came up through the system. He's from the area. Do we need to boo the kid in the third inning of a game where you just scored 9 runs and blew the doors off the net? Like, there's a time and a place. I don't know. I thought that was a bit much.
No, I thought it felt like overkill. And it's especially for a guy who you know is doing, and we kind of talked about this the other day, you anticipate and expect, you know, he's doing everything he can behind the curtain to just get back on neutral, right? You know, it's rough because when I heard the boos, and I just kind of like, whatever, that's just Yankee Stadium. But now, in a way, in a reference how you put it, it feels like because he's been the poster boy for all the Yankees' woes prior to these last couple games, like, I don't know if there's a way out. Like, I actually thought that...
Well, hit. I mean, the only way out is to hit.
Yes, but I also thought, in my train of thought, I thought the day off was, like, good.
Mm-hmm.
You're protecting him in a way. You know what I mean? Like, you're saving him from all everything he has to read or talked about. And then his performance yesterday, in the fashion the way the Yankees dominated, I was really hoping he got something going, right? Just to kind of like, all right, he's out of this rut. It didn't happen. But it's hard to tell Yankee fans when or not, you know, when to boo and when not to boo. You know, it's not going to happen.
And I'm not telling, they can do what they want. They booed Derek Jeter. I'm sure they booed Mickey Mantle back in the day. I understand all that. My point is time and place. It's 11-1.
Yep.
Your offense was just basically on the field for an hour. It was unbelievable. Yeah. You had a pitching change. The other guy comes in. He's walking the ballpark. You get home
and
runs.
I forget the pitcher's name. He had the bat. Because the catcher got hurt for the Nats.
With the catcher's interference.
Right.
So,
I'm not trying to be a hardo. I saw the bat hit the glove.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't look like he took his hand off.
No, but I think you dismiss the velocity of the swing and where the, you know, I know what you're saying. I think it's.
I watched it twice. It wasn't like he took a hard chop at it. Like he just followed through the swing. It hit his glove, hit the thumb part of it. And I'm saying to myself,
but that's it.
That's it. Like
that's it. It hit the thumb part. Like, it still hurts. He could have stayed out there. I get it.
I've seen guys dislocate their leg, pop back in place, and finish a game. Like, I've seen things.
It's a different sport, Willie.
I get that. But
I've also seen guys take a puck to the face, get stitched up, and go back out there.
But, Jerry, we're like, this is the pros, right?
Have you not watched Don Carlos Stanton the last 7 years?
Yes, I get that. Limitations.
I mean, a lot of these guys, and you know, people will
say,
well,
stuff just seems like.
I agree with you. I think it's a lot of these guys can fight through, and years prior.
But I said something about basketball. When I see some of these dumb injuries in basketball, I'm just like, dude, like, damn the money. Your dad's watching.
Right, we got to talk about Luka at some. I'm going to write this down because we've got to talk about Luka Doncic at some point.
But do you get what I'm saying?
Yes.
At some point, I remember growing up and being terrified to get hurt in front of my dad. Because I felt like I was going to disappoint him. Like I was going to be less in his eyes, and I couldn't be
like coming out of the game because you were hurt.
No, not that, or just like in the playground. You know what I mean? Like if I fell or ran, like did something crazy, I just felt like if my dad saw this, he's going to be like, "You're not the warrior I'm raising." You know what I mean? I just had that. So when I see pros get hurt from nonsense, it's just like your dad's watching. So that's my connection to it. And I get some injuries happen that we just don't know about. So maybe he's battling some. I get all that. But some stuff I'm just like, come on now, bro. Get back in the game. Like, let's.
I get it.
No.
I understand.
That was a moment I was just like. And then I saw the picture up there. He was like, I should not be here right now. but he had the bat.
They look like the Nationals yesterday look like. The Washington Generals to the Globetrotters yesterday.
Yeah,
that's what it felt like.
They looked like they stayed at a Holiday Inn last night. They looked like
they want to get the hell out of here.
100%. You looked at the bullpen, they were just like, dude, however we can wrap this up, let's get the hell out of town.
And then, you know, it's funny how things work because you were talking about, either it was yesterday or Tuesday, I don't remember it, but, you know, you want to see the progress. You want to see the work to, you know, change maybe the mindset of the fans. At least you know they're putting that work in. Susan, when I was driving back from Long Island, she was telling a story yesterday about Ben Rice. Mm. And how
he's been playing
how good the swing looks. Yeah. And she said, I don't think she specified the actual night or the game, but she had mentioned the game prior, one of the night games prior, that when she was leaving the ballpark midnight, Ben Rice was in the tunnel working on his swing.
Look at that.
At midnight, on a day where you figure a 7 o'clock game, he's probably there by 2:30, and he wasn't happy with his swings. And for an hour after the game, it's just rep after rep after rep.
But that goes back to what we were talking about. If that gets reported and that's Volpe in the tunnel, we now come back and say, well, the kid's in, he's in the dumpster, but he's fighting, right? Like, we kind of take the bite off him a little bit. And then I think you made a good point. That's a PR thing, right? If he's a homegrown kid, we know a 24-year-old kid who's really trying to figure it out, the team is starting to come together. If I'm Boone, I'm like, hey, man, if you see this guy out there working extra while everybody else is kind of heading toward the parking lot, maybe this helps him in some type of way. Maybe those boos don't happen yesterday, as you mentioned. Because he did rip one to third. It was just an out.
Yeah.
Right?
So, and even the line drive, I mean, it wasn't exactly the hardest line drive, but you got to hit them where they ain't. I mean, he hit a couple of balls yesterday. You know, you watch the Met game, and they had a lot of, you know, even the night before, you know, a lot of ground balls that find holes. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily the greatest swing in the world, but you find a spot where
just get it in play.
Even the game winner the other night that the Mets had.
Right.
You got a drawn in infield and the ball is poked the other way. If they're playing normal depth, it's an out. But because of the circumstance, it wasn't. Baseball's a funny game. You know, I know it's been a bad season. I also know the power numbers have been there for him and he's been streaky. I would never tell you not to boo. Go for it. I just thought yesterday was not the time.
I agree. I agree with you.
And especially you're finishing off a sweep. You feel, you know, and think about this too. The sweep started with as bad as those first three games were with Boston, and they were. They did a nice job Sunday avoiding that sweep. You come back with three straight like you were supposed to do. You have some, word of the day, momentum again. I don't know. Just kind of enjoy it. Maybe getting out to Chicago will be the best thing for him to get away from the home crowd for a little
city.
While.
I agree.
So, but all overall, though, you know, it's funny. I was out there with Sal yesterday, and I got there around noon. And as we got there, we got the Yankee lineup. And maybe even a little before that, Sal was talking about it. And my first thought was, I think, just like a lot of people, like, why is Giancarlo Stanton sitting when he is just red hot, like scorching?
Especially
right now.
The other night when he kind of hinted, like, let me out. Like, let me go.
Yeah.
Right? And Boone.
And talking about feeling better because he's playing the
100%.
Field.
100%. So when I saw Bellinger and Wright, I was just like, I thought the same thing. I'm like, Big G's hot right now. Why is he? Let him rip. Especially, I think, from a ball player standpoint, like, you know, nobody knows your body like you. You know when you're kind of either pushing through or you're in a good spot. After the performance he had the other night, it seemed like his confidence. It seemed like he's like, no,
he's there.
Yeah, he's there. Like he's in a groove. So I don't know if that's something he should have tugged on Boone's shoulder or on Pants. I'm like, hey, man, let's not.
Well, so two things there. Number one, we don't know how he was feeling. Maybe after a couple of days in the field, maybe he needed a day. I don't know.
Yep.
We don't know that. We also can't complain when the team puts up 11 runs. Yeah. Like, had they gone out yesterday, even though they won the series, had they gone out and lost the game, let's say, 4-2, mm-hmm. and the offense was kind of feeble, and you're sitting this guy, you got a case. They sit him. Kind of complaining, and then they go out and
they
do
go
that.
Crazy. Yeah, I got you.
And good to see Judge with the back-to-back home runs with Bellinger, but good to see Judge kind of, you know, get back a little bit too. Because if he gets going, could you imagine how scary this lineup would be if you've got him and Stanton hitting at the? We talk about the Mets all the time.
Yep.
If those two are hitting at the same time, I mean, what do you do if you're an opposing pitcher?
I mean, it was a stat that popped off that I heard yesterday. I think our outfield all over 25 home runs. I think Bellinger has 25.
Yeah, probably.
Judge is up there.
Grisham,
yeah, they're all.
Makes sense. They hit a lot of home runs.
It looked crazy.
What was it, four in the one inning?
It looked
yesterday?
Like a video game yesterday. At some point, I was like, this feels like abuse.
That is what they are capable of.
Yeah.
And so we saw it yesterday. Fun to watch. Yankees complete the sweep, and the Mets do the same as well with the Phillies. When we come back, we'll get CeeLo in again.
Think the Mets have found something.
They were sexy last night.
Sexy is a good word.
They
this Nolan McLean is.
Man.
I mean, you want to talk about setting a tone. And you know what? A sweep by the Phillies as they pulled to within, you know, another game closer to the division lead. You know, you want to talk about there's still a lot of time. You still think the Phillies might win the division. Whatever. Yes, all of that is true. What this kid did, though, and has done in his three starts is simply remarkable. And last night, you know, there's two different things that I love. Number one, he starts the game off by striking out Trey Turner on three straight pitches. And then you look at the eighth inning. And I'm not going to lie, when he finished the seventh, I'm like, are they going to let him pitch
the
eighth?
I thought they were going to pull him.
I know the pitch count was low, but I mean, who the hell knows in this day and age? He comes out.
It looked like he started to dry up a little bit. And I was like, this is a good time to kind of say, all right, good job, kid. Let's save you. But they was like, no, let him go.
Fair enough. But he goes out there for the eighth. And, you know, you got first and third, nobody out. And I'm thinking, they're going to yank him. And again, they let him pitch through it. This is what you were talking about the other day. They let him fight through it, and he winds up, you know, you get the fly ball, you get the pop up, and then he's out of the inning. And it was really something cool to see. And the place was electric. And another one of those nights where they're not winning only because of the home run ball. They're stringing together base hits. You had the two out. I think the two out RBI single from Vientos was really good to see. And then he hits the home run.
That bomb.
Unbelievable. And all of a sudden, the feeling of this team, the baseball season's stupid. I mean, last week when they can't, you know, when they're losing two out of three to Washington, it's like, this team stinks.
Right.
Then they go and they win the first two games in Atlanta, but they can't quite finish the sweep. It's like, this team stinks. And then you see what they've done against the Phillies and that lineup, and they have just continued. I think it's 30-something, like 38 hits in three games against the Phillies. I mean, really, you can't explain it.
No, I think you made a good point about the eighth. I thought when Soto was able to get the ball home to keep it scoreless, and then the same out to left field happened again, it was good to see the team said, nah, we talked about having that killer instinct. That was a great example of that right there.
Which was lacking.
Which was lacking. But to see it come together, and then obviously when he finished the eighth, to see everybody jumping around in the dugout, it was cool, right? Like, it's good to see this team dialed in, like, no, man, this is where we're going to, you know, charge the hill, if you will. So congratulations to the Mets. Performance level.
Gary Cohen said, I think it was in maybe the sixth inning, I don't remember when I heard him say it, but he said, if he wins, which he did,
yep,
he will be the first Met pitcher in the history of the franchise to win his first three starts.
Oh, wow.
That's incredible. When you think about, I mean, listen, I know the Mets haven't been around since 1910. I get that. But they've been around for a long time now, and they've had some pretty damn good pitchers. That, to me, was, I don't know, I was kind of shocked when I heard that. But, you know what, CBS Sports Network just put the graphic up. That is exactly indeed the case. So he was right when he said that. The thing I like about watching him, so if you take it back to Sean Manaea and Kodai Senga, I love Manaea, but he's been tough getting going this year, as we know. And Senga just nibbles so much, and he throws a million pitches. This kid comes right after you, and he is, I think, I wrote it down because I wanted to make sure I had it proper. Out of Nolan McLean, here we go. 8 innings, 4 hits, 6 strikeouts. How about this number? 95 pitches, 3 innings. 71 strikes.
Oof.
This guy is throwing, not on every batter, I get that, but on almost every batter, he is throwing strike one. He's ahead 0-2, 1-2, and he's in command of every at-bat, and he is so good within the strike zone. Now, you compare that to some of the other pitchers we've watched, that feels like a tooth extraction. I mean, he is a pleasure to watch. And that game moved along beautifully. He doesn't waste much time. And
well, I thought you, as you started off, I thought you hit it right on the hand. It's how he started the game. He just went right at him. It wasn't no warm-up, figure it out, let me kind of ease my way through this. I thought his command was on from the jump, and I thought it set the tone for the rest of the game.
No question. And now you think, you know, big picture, as we get closer and closer to September now, you start to think about Nolan McLean. Now, I don't know that this continues. I don't know that it doesn't. You know, these three games he's pitched, he's seeing new lineups. They're seeing him for the first time. So I don't know, you know, how long this run goes, but he's highly thought of. He dominated in the minor leagues, and so far in three games in the majors, he has looked the part and then some. You know, you think about Tong starting now tomorrow night against the Marlins. You think about Sproat probably on the way. And all of a sudden, and we talked about this yesterday, thinking about this game last night, you start to look at this Met pitching rotation in a much different way and this team, because all of a sudden, I don't care whether it's football, basketball, baseball, there is a renewed energy about this team because of what is coming up the pike.
Right, I agree. But I also think one of the positives, as we talked about, is the fact that we were able to get through six and one of our guys looked strong and in command. And I think it just adds more oomph to the bullpen. Like, hey, man, we can do this, right? This is on us. And we'll see what happens. I'm like, Tong's up, and hopefully this isn't – I know I've been a little redundant here, but hopefully this is the momentum we've been talking about. Like, this is the surge that we need, especially as we roll into September.
Well, and a big part of that, too, as we move from the pitching to the lineup, are the quality at-bats they're having. And Mark Vientos, while, you know, maybe wasn't part of building that lead, but tacked on. I mentioned the two-out single. You know, think about what we've complained about with the Mets all season long, and that is hitting with runners in scoring position, getting the big two-out hit. You know, I came in here I think it was with you, or maybe it was with G, whatever. That was you with you on Monday.
Yeah.
Or even Sunday when I did the solo show. You know, I watched the Red Sox on Saturday put great at bat after great at bat against the Yankees, and they had a lot of two-out hits, a lot of, you know, hitting with runners in scoring position, moving runners over, doing the little things to make sure they scored runs in different ways. And again, it is only a few days, and I get that. But all of a sudden, this team seems like, as you say, the momentum, it seems like they're starting to click on all cylinders. Aside from Ryan Helsley, who was pretty awful the other night, you are starting to get decent starting pitching. Last night, incredible starting pitching. But the quality of the at-bats to me, you know, you look at where they strung together those hits the other night to win the game in the ninth inning, four straight hits off of Duran, which was fun to see. Then the bottom of the third last night, you got this kid, he's putting up zeros, inning one, inning two, inning three, and then all of a sudden here comes, I think it was Beatty that doubled. You had the, excuse me, bunts. I don't know what Senga was doing, if it was supposed to be a sacrifice or whatever, but he gets the bunt single, and then all of a sudden you get, you know, Lindor comes up with a base hit, Soto comes up with a base hit, Alonso, it was all of a sudden everything you wanted to see, and it's like, this is what we've been looking for all year.
Yeah, I think it's great, man, because I'm falling in love. I can't believe I'm saying this that long. I'm really falling in love with Vientos, man. For him to have that RBI single and then come back around with that two-run bomb, I'm like, man, this is – and it's so interesting because we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier. If Lindor and Alonso and Soto aren't doing their job, they fall flat and they look flat. But when you see all hands on deck and they're responding and they're producing, man – They're starting to look like must-watch TV. And I thought last night was a great example. And so when you, like, to your point, when you have the bats performing at that level where they're kind of matching what McClain was able to do last night, that's when you say, okay, we got something here. Now how can this carry on?
And I've got to think, too, inside that clubhouse, when you see a kid go out there and pitch the way he's pitching, you know, I also would think that kind of creates some more energy for the team itself as well. And then when he goes out there and starts the way he did, you know, I know it's not easy. And it's Taijuan Walker, who, I mean, at this point in his career is not exactly a dominant starter. But I've got to think they were, like, you know, foaming at the mouth last night to get started and kind of continue this momentum, as you like to call it.
Yeah, it's so funny. You talk about the crazies, the Mets crazies. When they started panning the crowd, we saw Elmo and Oscar, and then you saw the microphone thing.
It's wild. I know, it's all over the place.
I saw that, and I was like, this is a little getting out of it. It's getting crazy. Yep. Some dude had Tupperware. He brought the
I saw that with a hanger to make it the microphone.
But it was great because this is what sports is about, right? And then when you have the performance they had last night, you're like, all right, this is why you dial in this time of year, especially when the team is trying to make a run. So I enjoyed the game last night. It was fun, and I just, you know, hopefully it's something they can tack on.
It is crazy, though. Well, again, it doesn't matter what the sport is. It's amazing how a season can have ebbs and flows like it does. It could be a football team that starts, you know, the Bengals last year started, whatever it was, 1-3, or they started horribly.
0-3.
Was it 0-3?
Yeah, it was 0-3.
And then they're fighting at the end to try to make the playoffs when they couldn't get out of their own way early. You kind of knew they had it in them. The Mets, while I'm not saying they started, you know, 10-30 or anything like that, but they had that swoon in June, even much of May, too. May, June, and July were really awful. And parts of August haven't been great. But yet, here we go, as we hit September, and this is really the stretch run. If, in fact, they can, and I don't expect them to win, you know, 13 games in a row. I mean, it'd be nice, but, you know, if all of a sudden they keep winning series after series after series, you know, the word you use is momentum. You know, that's day to day. If they can string together series wins, you've got a team that, while looked fantastic in April, looked dead in the water in July, all of a sudden, with that lineup, with the renewed life in the rotation and the length you think you might get from the starters, you know, if in fact that does indeed continue, you can make every case again that this team could go challenge and go deep in the playoffs. In terms of the Mets, that to me was the bigger story because you had a lot in that game that I thought was interesting. One, falling behind 3-0, you know, with a fan base that's starving for better baseball. And again, you don't get a good start from your ace pitcher in Kodai Senga. But I thought the fight this team showed up and down the order, specifically the bottom half, really did the job. And that team got a win, really one that they needed to bounce back from the loss in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. There was a lot of talk about how they kind of blew the last game in Atlanta. And you mentioned, and I got to give you your props, that when you go up 2-0, you expect to put the knife in them. They didn't. They ended up losing that game. And then they go down, in reference to last night, you know, they're down 3, but they rally, right? And I don't know how much of the delay had to do with it. Mm. But they did respond after that. So credit the Mets, man. I thought it was, I think it was telling because you thought you expected more out of Senga. It didn't give it to you. But when you have McNeil and Turner and all these other guys really produce at the level they were able to, man, it was just it's a good night to be a Met.
Yeah, and Mark Vientos, who continues to hit the bat. And you're right when you talk about, you know, they're down 3-0. The starter's not doing the job. The bullpen has been much maligned recently. And you've got to be thinking, wow, here we go again with this. And I Andrew brought up a couple of pitchers that can pitch tonight for sure. But just, to me, it's more how many nights can you go by relying on the guys in the pen to get, you know, I only say 9, 12, 13, 14, last night 15 outs. It's hard. It's hard to do that on a consistent basis. But they did it last night. The big key now is, you know, this is a 3-game series. They won them while everyone can be annoyed, like I was, with the loss Sunday. Ultimately, they did take 2 of 3 in Atlanta. Go get tonight, and ultimately you will have won this series too. To me, while you want to win every game for sure, win your series. If you win your series from this point forward, you know, going into and through September, they will be a playoff team. Because if you can play 600 baseball, they will get where they need to be. So don't fool around. Go out tonight. Get the win. Maybe Sean Manaea can give you some length tonight and can kind of find it. And I think people will feel better about this team even more so tomorrow.
What do you think Mendoza's most pressed about? The pitching or?
Wow. You mean his biggest concern?
Correct.
There's a lot. I mean, it's the
bullpen. For me, it would be the bullpen.
The bullpen's a concern. You know, Nolan McClain has been really good. His 2 starts, but it's 2 starts, so I can't. Like, get to the point where I feel like I'm relying on the kid yet. I think you're really concerned with Senga and Manaea. I don't know how you couldn't be. I would be, even though he was good last time out and gave you some length, you know, Clay Holmes is still in uncharted territory by being a starter this late in the season. I would be slightly concerned about that. I would be concerned about, you know, hitting with runners in scoring position, though they did it last night.
They did great.
That's been a major problem all season long. I would be concerned about the catching position. There's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, now, is there a lot that's good? Yes. Mark Vientos is really hitting the baseball again. Juan Soto got on base a million times last night. You know, Francisco Lindor, while 0 for 6 last night, has been fantastic of late for the last, you know, 4 weeks or so.
Yeah, and to your point with Lindor, it looks like the injury is behind him.
Yes, I would agree. I 100% agree with that. So there, while I can pick a lot of good things, the problem is I'm still stuck on a lot of things. When you ask me the question, what are you most concerned at? Throw them in a hat. They're all, to me, a big concern with this team. Gio said something on Friday with Boomer. He said, what are the Mets good at right now?
That's a great question.
And what he meant by that is consistently good. Like, you're going to go to the ballpark. What do you know that you're going to get from them? Now, I could tell you, you know, Francisco Lindor's had, in the past, he's the most dominant shortstop fielding-wise in the game. This year's been a little shaky at times. He hasn't been himself. But I would say prior to this year, if you ask me what do they do consistently well, I know I'm going to the ballpark. I'm going to see Francisco Lindor play his ass off at shortstop. If I asked you right now, you're going to the park tonight, what do you know the Mets are going to do well at? What are they good at?
Give you a heart attack?
That's not a good answer. That's a bad answer.
Like, listen, they were able to score 21 runs over the weekend against the Braves, right? And so
but then scored 2 against a guy who had an ERA of 7.
Exactly. That's where I'm going. So, like, it's hard to kind of put your hat on what's that one thing. But then they was able to rally last night and really get it done with runners in scoring position. So I don't know where do you put your hat at other than that they've showed grit. And they're going to give you a show. Either it's going to end bad or good, but you're going to get a show by some degree.
And I think what you just said is right. They have shown in the past, you used the word grit. I can say they've shown that they can be productive. And if they can get on a roll, they clearly can do it. We've seen it. We saw what they did last year, and it's largely the same makeup of the team, adding Soto into the mix too. That would be the glass half full, as we've seen it before. And if this team got going and ever clicked on all cylinders, they can scare a lot of teams. And that's it. I think that's what you hang your hat on.
That's the only thing I could think of.
But they got to get there first.
But they got to win tonight, too.
Oh, I agree. They got to get one. Got to get tonight or tomorrow. You got to win one of these next two games and win the series, and you'll feel pretty good about it. The other story that it came out about, I don't know, an hour ago or so, the Giants are indeed waiving Tommy DeVito. I can't, in any circumstance, believe he's going to end up on the practice squad.
Yeah, but Figs made a good point. If you're the Jets, go get him.
Any team that needs a backup quarterback. Kid,
you know he's competent enough to play the position. He's a good backup. Can he win you two or three games? That's what you're really asking
for.
I think he can, too. Especially for a team if you're in the New York Jets who just let go of Adrian Martinez. Tyrod Taylor's still been out all of preseason dealing with an E. He's 35 years old, by the way. And you're putting the whole season on Justin Fields. Right? Like, you're going to... God forbid Justin Fields gets dinged, you're going to need a guy who can buy you some time until you get Fields back on the field and healthy. So, if I'm Tommy D, whoever that guy that walks around with the fedora, tell him to call Glenn Amuji.
Call over to Florham Park. They could be interested in Mike White being let go by Buffalo. That's possible, too. And then you wonder, as the cuts go, is it 4 o'clock today? So the official deadline for all these cuts.
It's a rough day for a lot of ball players, man.
Yeah, as we talked about yesterday.
Yeah, it's rough.
It's a very tough day, you would think. And I'm sure there's a lot of guys right now just hoping their phone doesn't ring.
Not even that. There's a lot of that, too. And there's a lot of guys who are, you know, walking into airports not knowing what tomorrow's going to look like. And that's, you know.
Or if their career's over.
Correct.
Is there another quarterback of substance that you think would be available today? Other than Mike White and
Tommy DeVito? Well, I know the Lions let go of Hendon Hooker. They dropped him. Why did you just laugh? Why? Because I said Hooker? Good.
No, I mean, it's not exactly.
Well, he's not a big name, but he's okay. I liked him. I liked him in college.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I have a question. How is it? I understand the NFL is a little bit better than college. I get that. How is it that a guy can look so dominant in college and then be a backup in the NFL and when he gets his chance look like a deer in headlights?
Yeah. I don't know, man. So many guys, I think, fall into that position where they feel like they can be the difference. And when the game seems bigger than them, they lose confidence in themselves. It happens all the time. I thought he was going to be good. I did. It just didn't happen for him, unfortunately.
And then you've got guys like a Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Or like a Brock Purdy, who are thought so little of by everybody. And I'm really hoping that's Shedeur Sanders, too. I really hope that he gets a chance somewhere and plays really well. But you've got those two guys that are just great examples of not thinking anything of, and when they got their chance, not only didn't look like a deer in headlights, they grabbed it by the you-know-whats and ran with it, won to the Hall of Fame.
But that's why I think that's why Jackson Dart has had so much success this preseason. I mean, the kid hasn't thrown an interception. I think he's thrown for over 372 yards, 3 touchdowns. Like, he looks like, man, this guy looks like he started week one. But it's because he doesn't have to come and be the guy right away.
True.
All he has to do is just be Jackson Dart. He knows there's two veteran guys who are more than capable to lead in the charge. He just has to be a competent rookie and show that he can play at that level. So that's why I think he's had so much early success. And that's why I'm worried about the Giants, because don't get itchy about this, right? Like, I'm glad he's...
Oh, about trying to get him in too soon.
He showed poise. He's confident throwing the ball. You know, they talked about his effectiveness and efficiency and being a leader and all that swag and moxie he has. Good. You drafted good. Stay there. Keep the Lambo in the garage, right? Like, you need a field general, Russell Wilson, and you need some veteran guys out there to get you through this tough month of March. Don't feel like you have to get him out there because, Jerry, you know, like I know, if you do go to him early and he doesn't pan out, where do you turn?
Well, you get fired.
Boom.
Now, that said, a lot of this will be on Russell Wilson. I mean, if Russell Wilson plays well...
But give Russ 6 games at least.
Yeah, well, it depends on how those games go. I mean, if they're 0-4 and they look like crap, they are going to make it. Now, I think with you said yesterday, you think they go to Jameis Winston first.
Yeah, I think they should go to Winston.
Salvageable still.
Right.
I think at 0-4 not playing well, I don't think it matters. I think I think that's when they go to him.
Yeah, but I don't think 0-4 cancels you out the season. I don't think that erases you.
No, but it's hard to come back 100%. From that. You know,
and I know it's a tough division. I get all that. But nevertheless, I think once you go to a young guy that early, you're telling the rest of the team, let's start preparing for this.
I don't think there's any question about it. Yeah. There were players in the Giant locker room back in 04 when they went to Eli that were not happy about it. You know, they were 5-4. And again, I said this yesterday or 2 days ago. Kurt Warner, while they were 5, kind of similar to Justin Fields in a way. Justin Fields was 4-2 and lost his job last year to Russell Wilson. Kurt Warner and the Giants were 5-4. That system, though, wasn't what Warner was doing with the Rams. It just wasn't. Mm-hmm. And while they were winning, it didn't feel great.
Clunky.
It was. And mm-hmm. I really do think the thinking inside the Giants was, this is nice. We're 5-4. We're not winning, though. We're not winning this season the way this looks.
Yep.
Make the move. I am with you. Let the kid sit. Some want him to play immediately. I think it's a good thing that he's going to sit, and you've got two capable quarterbacks in front of him.
Yeah, I just don't want the Giants to rush the recipe, right? Like, you got an opportunity in a division where a lot of people aren't thinking highly of you. But as I stated, I think the defense is going to be a lot better. I think the offensive line is better. I think you have two studs and Malik Nabers. I think Theo Johnson is going to be good for him. I think the kid Miller, if he can become a legit third down receiver for them. The run game, I think, with Tracy, there's a lot of hope and potential there. Things start clicking for you, or if they don't, I still don't feel the need to throw him out there right away. Kind of let this thing manifest and preserve Jackson Dart until you build this roster up when it's ready for him.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Shop Blinds.com Labor Day Mega Sale, happening now. Save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free measure. Rules and restrictions may apply.